I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. Thanks for being at Eastlake Church. If you're watching online, great to have you. And check us out live sometime. So here's the disclaimers. Clarice is my wife, and we've been married over 20 years. But I want to say we have never had a perfect marriage, and we don't have a perfect marriage now. So I'm not trying to come up here and be all Mr., you know, better half and say, oh, I'm the big expert on marriage, because I'm not. Really, the reason I'm going to be transparent is because we're all in this together. And that marriage is a process. And if I've learned anything in the 20-plus years, it's marriage is a process. So for the next 5 weeks, we'll talk about how is it that we process through this relationship and fail-proof it. And then disclaimer number two is that it's hard to capture everything in just one talk. So try to mark your calendars. Be here for all the talks, all the different weekends. Try to make it because we'll cover all the different areas of marriage and try to give a whole perspective. And then lastly, I want to say this. I know that today, folks sitting in the chairs today, for some, you're in a marriage that's really struggling. And there's pain there. And then you might be in a marriage where there's just a lot of frustration and disappointment. And the talks are not designed to heap on the guilt. In fact, really the goal of these talks is to create hope. Because we all start marriage with so many hopes and desires. I mean, you know, you find somebody and you start to date them, and you date them for a while, and you're like, nah, they're not the one. So you find somebody else and you date them for a while, and you date them a little bit longer, and you think maybe they are, and then they do something like really weird, like fart at dinner, and you're like, oh, they're not the one. And so, like, you know, and then you date a few other people, and then finally you find one, and you think, whoa, they might be the one. You date them a little bit longer, and you know, just short of hiring a private investigator, you feel like, whoa, they could be the one. And then you end up married. You know, and now when you're married, because, you know, they're the one, you go into marriage with just like a ton of desires. We all know what we want when we get married. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, when I arrive into that relationship, I've been thinking about it for a while. I know what I want. I even know the size of the house that I want. And I know how many children that I want, the kind of car that I want to drive, and they're going to work or they're not going to work, or we're going to share our friends or we're not going to share our friends, or keep our friends completely separate because you don't want to know my friends. And you know what you want when you get married. I mean, you know what you want your wife to wear to bed and what to never wear to bed. You know, and your wife knows that she wants to be married to someone that doesn't care because he loves me just how I am. You know, we know those things. We have all these wants and desires, and we show up in the relationship, and we're very clear on what we want. Now, the problem is we marry somebody that has a whole ton of wants themselves. So they arrive in the relationship, and they know what it is that they want. And when I'm dating, I mean, you have to admit, dating doesn't set us up very well for marriage in our society. Because when you're dating somebody, all you're really thinking about is, are they the kind of person that can give me what I want? It never occurs to you to practice giving them what they want. So if you're single and throughout this marriage, don't stay away because there'll be lots of stuff to learn. If you're single, you might as well start practicing because here's what marriage is. It's a lot about giving the other person what they want. But you don't catch that in dating. And of course, the problem with dating is there's this huge back door, huh? And there's an exit there. And when in a dating relationship, when I don't get what I want, I start moving towards the back door. And you know, you can show up in the marriage relationship with the same sort of perspective. It's like, I'm not getting what I want. And then there's like this undertone that says, I'll just move on. And maybe you struggle against that thought. You don't ever want to just move on. I mean, it's almost like dating doesn't prepare us for marriage. It prepares us to just move on. And then we get into marriage and we don't want to move on, but it starts tugging at us because we're not getting what we want. And what expectations do you have for your spouse? And you can feel it's just sort of tugging you away. And they're very clear on what they want too. And then the two desires match. And so like the guy's thinking, well, I know what I want. A big, huge house with like hardly no yard. Let's put cement everywhere and we'll just buy a blower. It's the kind of yard that I want. And the wife's like, no, I want a medium house. And I want nice big yards for the kids and the grandkids to play. And you're thinking, well, they can come and mow my lawn, you know? And it's like, here it is, cars. Like the dude's thinking like, we're going to drive a truck. And the girl's like thinking, we're going to get a Prius. You're like, a Prius? Can you put a Hemi in a Prius? I mean, I don't want to, I can't be seen in, you know, and like, how many kids do you want to have? Well, I think two kids is good, or maybe three. You find out she wants to, like, raise a basketball team. She wants, like, eight or nine kids. You're like, thinking, I can't pay for that many kids. That's a lot of diapers. And you start figuring out, well, how much money do you want to have? And here's a good one, jobs. Because one person thinks, I really just want to find a job where I can change the world, and I have great working relationships. A job for me is all about being fulfilled and feeling like I'm making a difference. And then you marry this person, like, that's not what a job's for. A job is to earn the most money you can possibly make. It doesn't matter if you hate your job. You go to your job to make money. And you can see the problem. I mean, pretty soon what happens is you got these competing desires and wants, and desires are strong. I mean, I know what I want, and I need what I want, and I expect to get what I want, because that's why I got married in the first place, was to get what I want. It becomes really hard. So ask the question again. What expectations do you have for your spouse? Do you know the very first way, like when it comes to fail-proof your marriage, is to know this, that we can shift from desires. We get married with desires, and before we're out the door on the wedding day, they become into expectations. And here's what an expectation is. It's when I expect you to make what I want to occur for me. You're responsible for what I want. And we bring those into the marriage. So I just ask you again, what type of expectations do you have? That's our week one. It's our big idea this week, and you can turn your expectations back into a desire. If you can get just this one thing down, so many things fall into place when it becomes like trying to figure out how are we going to be married. And, you know, there's some different things that we're going to cover. I'll sort of give you a snapshot. So this is expectations, how they become desires. And next week, we're going to talk about differences between men and women. So don't miss that, how do expectations get in. And then week three is going to be communication. And then week four, we titled it My Lame Sex Life. So we're going to see what the Bible has to say about sex. And it's kind of a PG-13, so don't miss that one because it'll be really good. And I understand the band's going to be doing worship in Speedos, so that should be kind of exciting. And then week five is how to stay in love forever. So five different weeks trying to figure out. The whole concept is, how do we find the expectations, return them to desires? Because desires aren't bad. And these aren't going to be talks to say, just be plastic person or vanilla person, or just like be all creamy and don't have any desires and just sort of be a doormat and you don't need to have any desires, because people that follow God, they really just do what everybody else. Nuh-uh. We all have desires. And it's okay to have desires. You desire to be cherished by your husband. You desire to have a certain type of house, certain type of car, certain types of kids. You desire to be with someone that unconditionally loves you. So you just know when you wake up, it's like no matter what goes down. I mean, is there anything better than when you're with someone and they've shown you that no matter what you do, no matter what occurs, I'm not leaving. Those are great desires. And don't give them up. But when they become expectations, when I put those on my spouse, the weight of those expectations can cripple the marriage. So let's talk about it. You wrote in there, you can turn your expectations back into a desire. Let me read a little part of the Bible. It's in your notes. That was the last thing the young man expected, circle that, to hear. And so, crestfallen, he walked away. He was holding on tight to a lot of things, and he couldn't bear to let it go. Story about Jesus, not about marriage, but this young man wants to have a relationship with Jesus. And when he starts to get a little closer to having the relationship, he realizes it's not going to be what he expects. He's not going to get what he wants. And so he starts to walk away, sad. When the really sad thing is, he doesn't stay long enough to find out even how to have the relationship, what the relationship can be, and how great it can be in his life. And marriage can be like that. You figure out pretty quickly, wait a second, how did I miss all this when I was dating them? I mean, I'm not getting what I want. I mean, like, and then so you start to walk away, and you may even physically walk away. Some of you have already felt the sting of divorce. And I want to let you know, East Lake Church is a place for everyone to process with another chance. You'll notice today we didn't hang any signs around here. All the divorced person, you sit over here, and you know, people that are struggling in your finances over here, liars back in the back, and you know, you struggle with not being faithful back there, and you got angry at your children, you go outside, listen on the there's no signs here. We're all in it together. So if you have been through pain in your marriage and maybe somebody walked away, maybe you walked away. That's hard when you're the one that walks away and then you look back and go, oh, I should have stayed longer. You're welcome at Eastlake Church. It's a church for everyone. And sometimes we just walk away emotionally. And you know, you sort of inch away. It's not like you stomp off, you know, it's just you sort of kind of drift and you walk away. And pretty soon there's so much distance, you're so far. And like this, it says he's holding on tightly. Don't we hold on so tightly to the expectations, because we're so sure if I don't get what I expect, I'm never going to be happy. What expectations do you have for your spouse, and you're holding on to them so tightly, because you are, if I don't get what I expect, I'll never be happy. And again, it's okay when they're a desire, because desires can be shared, but when it's an expectation, it becomes destructive in the marriage. And let's look at here's a couple different ways it happens. Number one, expectations create compliance. So some people are just wired to comply. Here's their thing. I mean, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to make sure there's peace in the marriage. And so they'll do anything. They'll go to the extremes, man. In marriage, relationships, apply it wherever you are. But like specifically in the marriage, like I'll do anything to make sure there's peace. And you know what? There's no fighting. Nobody ever fights. But the marriage is dying. And there's so much distance. It's like when one person decides, well, the goal of marriage is not to always be fighting. So somebody's stronger and somebody's like the compliant one. And so they start to comply. And here's what normally happens when you comply. Here's the first thing you start to do. And by the way, I've noticed that you can do this for about 5, 6, 7 years. And then it begins to wear down because you get so resentful and bitter because you're not getting anything that you want. Because here it is right here. It's like the other person wants you to be like them. Because if you're like them, they'll get everything they want. And so you try that. Like, okay, I'm going to think like them. I'm going to act like them. I'm going to do everything just like them. It's like, when I get this going in my marriage, my wife, Clarice, she's so funny. She kind of sarcastically and jokingly says, oh, pretty soon, every day I'm getting more like you. Pretty soon I'll be just like you. Stinker. But it's kind of like a red light that goes off and says, oh, here I go again. I think that everything's going to be how I want it if they act just like me. And here's the problem. You can't. We figure that out. You're like, I'm not like you. I'm like me. I don't care how many dishes pile up. You're a freaking neat freak. That's my house, by the way. And so it's like, and you start realizing, and here's what happens. At some point, you become very, very bitter and resentful. Because you want to be who you are. Do you know you never feel acceptance from your spouse when you're trying to copy the kind of person that they are? You know what that's called? That's called a roommate marriage. And here's how you know it's a roommate marriage. Because here's how you know that you become resentful, is you don't care anymore about the things that you used to care about. They used to call and say, hey, I'm going to hang out with the guys today and go down to the pub and we're going to like maybe hang out. I'll be home at 10 or 11, last minute call. I'm not going to be home for dinner. It used to make you so furious. Now you're like, I don't care. Great. I don't care if you come home. I actually like it better when you're not home. That's a roommate marriage because you remember back when you had roommates. The best part about having a roommate is when they weren't there. So you have a place to yourself. It's a roommate marriage. And you can like go through a week of roommate marriage if you're not careful. And you never think it's because of expectations. Listen to this. Someone sent this into Eastlake Church. Someone that goes to Eastlake Church sent this in. This is them talking here, a little email letter. I used to live by the notion that if you give, then in turn you'll receive. After getting married, I expected this formula would naturally apply to husbands and wives. Everyone says marriage is a lot of hard work, not just 50-50. I was told you have to give 100% each person. If so, what happens when one spouse is not fulfilling their end of the bargain? Then what happens? In my marriage, that meant a buildup of a lot of letdowns that eventually led to infidelity. Our marriage was based on expectation that we would exclusively meet each other's needs. Things started off great, but eventually life took its toll. Feelings of exhaustion and neglect and resentment and bitterness began to surface. Communication died, and an outlet for escape became a new priority. Our worst nightmare was staring us in the face. Through prayer and counseling, we realized that we were putting all the weight of our relationship on the other person. We were focused on the give and take expectation and desperately needed to realign everything and put God at the center of our lives. By approaching Jesus, we were able to give and receive in a way that wasn't an expectation. And now He fills our souls. We're able to give ourselves completely to each other without the pressure, listen to what she says, without the pressure of unrealistic expectations. Remember, an expectation is when I expect you to make my desires come true. I expect you to give me what I want. A desire is when I maintain responsibility. And the first point is here is this idea of compliance. There's a big difference because when I have compliance in my relationship, the best I can hope for is peace, not closeness. And the huge difference between desires and expectations is because I put everything on my spouse to make my wants come true. Very different than desires. Here's the biggest difference. You can't share an expectation, but you can share a desire. See, a desire is something that you can share, but an expectation is a one-way street. Let me put my marriage out there a little bit so you can kind of see it. So Clarice and I, here's a desire that we have. Our desire is that we'll be willing to communicate, that we'll be able to communicate. Our whole marriage, we've been working on how can we talk to each other? How can we create a safe place to talk and to listen, to get through to each other? On our marriage day, on our wedding day, one of the things the pastor said right to us is, take the time to communicate. I think he was kind of talking to me more. Take the time to communicate. Make sure you communicate. So that's a desire that we have. We share that. Now, on my wedding day, I didn't know it was going to be a lifetime project to try to figure out Clarice. I mean, it's a big project to try to figure out a woman. That's a huge project. I wasn't ready for that. And I'm sure it's a big project for a woman to try to figure out a man. And so I didn't realize how to do that. I didn't know how to do that. I mean, I can't even figure out why Clarice has to have more than one pair of boots. I mean, I didn't even understand it. It's like, what is up with that? I mean, every year, it's like, here come the boots again, the boots. She gets a little bit of money, but she's going to get some new clothes, and she spends almost all of it on another pair of boots, and then she brings it out, and she shows me the boots, and I'm looking at the boots, and I'm like, they don't seem that much different than the other boots. She's like, oh, no, these are really, really different. You know, she starts going on about the boots, and I'm like, well, how much did the boots cost? And I'm thinking, now, do I say any of that to Clarice? No! I'm not an idiot. Why? Because she's not asking my opinion. She's sharing. She's just sharing about the boots. Now, don't be cracking me, dudes, when I tell you this. I actually get excited now when my wife gets boots. Why? Because her real desire is to just have style and fashion. And I get that. So it's not like me. Like, I got one pair of boots, and that's how many boots I need for the next 10 years. I'm good on boots. But that's not how my wife is. She wants to look a certain way and have certain type of things, and she has fashion. And it's my desire that she... So we share that. So when I see the boots, I'm good with it. I'm like, wow, that's really great. You got yourself a pair of boots, and it's really good. But if it becomes an expectation... Now hear this. If it becomes an expectation, so all of a sudden, here's what it is. Clarice is like, well, I expect my husband to earn enough money that I can always be in style and I can always have fashion and I can get boots whenever I want it. And I expect to have the kind of a marriage where I can get the clothes that I want. And that's something that I expect. Now, if I don't want to fight, then I just go to compliance. I just put a smile on my face. I say, that's nice, honey. That's a nice pair of boots. But on the inside, I'm thinking, there's the frickin' reason I didn't get those Utes tickets. Man, that ticks me off. You know, it's like, why should you have to have those boots anyways? Man, everybody only needs, one pair of boots is all you ever need. And because it begins with an expectation, and listen, Listen now. Are you aware of any expectations that you're living under? You can feel it. And you're faking it. Because you don't want to fight. You know what? I don't blame you. But God has something better. What do you do? Got an idea for you. Here's the question you can ask yourself. Ask yourself this question, because it's a great question. Ask yourself this question. What am I doing to make sure the marriage stays peaceful? It's kind of a challenging question. Ask yourself this question. I'll ask you. What are you doing to maintain peace in your marriage? Take the chance now. What are you doing? You know, sometimes, everybody's smart in this room, so you can kind of figure that out, but sometimes you can't even see your own life well enough, so you have to ask God, God, what am I doing to make peace? You know, and for some of you, that's a good idea. And others, you're like, God, what do you got to bring him into this for? I mean, it's like, I don't even believe in God. How am I supposed to talk to God? And so I got this guy that I work with, and he prays atheist prayers. And so he doesn't know if he believes in God or if he even thinks there is a God, but he knows that he needs help. And so he says a prayer. And here's all I'm saying. I know the Jesus of the Bible hears everyone's prayers. So you might even have to pray. And here's the question to ask. Here it is right here. What am I doing in my marriage just so I can have peace? That'll reveal the compliance. And then here's the idea. Initiate a conversation. And sit down with your spouse and say, hey, can we talk for 15 minutes? And here's what you could talk about. Here's what I want you to talk about. Ask them about their desires. See, that's how you get away from expectation. Just talk to them and say, hey, what is it that you really desire as a husband? And what do you want to see happen in our marriage? And you know, what is it you really want? And, you know, take the risk. You may pull out like a baby doll nightgown or something like that, but maybe not. Just take the chance because it'll catch him so by surprise. Or ask your wife, how do you desire me to be as your husband? What do you desire to see in our future? Start talking about desires, and then here's the thing. Pick one desire that you're willing to do. Just start with a baby step. Just pick one desire. Is it going to cause all kinds of problems in your relationships when you start complying? Probably. But if you'll just pick one desire, just one, I promise you, it'll change your hearts. One desire that you can share, something simple like boots, can change everything in a marriage. So the question is, where am I trying to keep the peace? Initiate a conversation about their desires, what it is they want, and then pick one thing you're willing to do. Now the second thing, look in your notes, expectations create conflict. And so this is just the opposite of compliance. I mean, these are the couples that fight all the time. They're very comfortable fighting. It's normal for them to want to fight. They're okay with fighting to get what it is they want. So they're okay with that. That's normal for them. They're fighters. I mean, it's no big deal for them to fight. And so you have the people that comply all the time, and then you have the people that, you know, like they're going to fight for what they want. And this marriage is not a roommate marriage. This is a contract marriage where there's lots of you shoulds and you, I did for you last time and you're supposed to. And, you know, especially like when you get in a contract marriage, it's sort of based on agreements. And here's the problem. Somebody's always screwing up the contract. So they're in the doghouse. They're in trouble because it's like this like debtor relationship. I mean, you know, this time I'm better than you. So you have to do stuff. And, oh, you're the screw up this time. And in a contract, like you have a contract with each other. And it creates a marriage that's sort of based on what you should and shouldn't do and how well you can do it. And here's the problem with a contract marriage, that even when you do what you're expected to do, you never feel unconditional love because you just did what was expected. Do you know that I've never gotten a long, romantic, perfumed letter from Rocky Mountain Power? They've never sent me one letter saying, gosh, you just mean the world to me, and I'm so glad that you chose me. My world wouldn't be right without you. I mean, the way you pay your bill all the time, and my world just revolves around, I am so glad that we're together. Never once. But if you miss a payment, or if you miss two payments, you get a personal letter, and they want to talk about your relationship. They want to talk about what it's like to be together. And if you miss three or four payments, you get a phone call from a human. And they call you up and they want to talk to you. And they want to say what it's like to be together and how you could work on the problem. And you might be in a marriage where the only time you get attention is when you screw up and you miss a payment. It's contract marriage. You do what you're expected to do, you don't get anything. You're expected to do that. Here's how it shows up in my world. So I'm going to sort of put my little quirky, weird self out there. I'm like a neat person, so I can't stand like stacks of stuff and dishes and all kinds of crap all over the place. It just weirds me out. So that's just my weird thing. And so when I come home, I get out of the car, I'm already looking around. Okay, where's stuff messed up? Who left what out? And I come into the house, you know, no kids, hi, is everything. I'm like, is this thing's cleared out? Why is magazines everywhere? And TV's blaring. It's like, you know, and everybody's stressed out right away because here comes Mr. Neat Freako, you know. And in he comes, and I'm looking all over the place, you know, and everybody knows that I'm looking. Now, if everything is just fantastic, well, then great, you know, I don't say anything. But usually, you know, what I do is I run in, I start doing the dishes with one hand and sweeping with the other, and then I'm hinting, has anybody seen the vacuum in, like, the last year? You know, and it's like, and then everybody's freaking out, trying to, like, oh, let's make him happy so he doesn't, you know, get mad. And then if everything's really great, I don't say anything. Well, I usually say something. Because you know what? When you have expectations, they're always perfect in your mind, and nobody can ever hit them. So I walk in and I'm looking all around and it is so hard. I don't know how it is. I always see something. And it's so hard for me to keep my mouth shut. And so here's where the fighting starts. So everything, work really hard. Everything's great. Here comes dad. Here comes the husband. Here he comes home. And I'm looking around and everything. And everything's really great. And then I have to say, oh, what's the basket of laundry about? And the 4th of July begins. Because my wife's like, the basket of laundry. I cleaned the bathtub and the toilet, and I get the whole bathroom cleaned, but I mopped the kitchen floor, and I did the dishes, I fed the dog, and I did the laundry, and I did the grocery shopping. How dare you come in here and talk about one little basket of laundry that I get unfolded? How can you be that way? And of course, I'm like all guys. I think I can just magically make it go away by going, I don't know. I'm stupid. You are stupid. How could you be that way? It's just a big fight. So I don't know what goes on in your world. I don't know what causes the conflicts, but where are your expectations that create conflict? And you arrive with them. You bring them into the relationships. It's at the job. It's with people. It's with the person you're married to. It's who you're dating. It's like you come in, and it always ends up in a fight. And isn't it the worst to be fighting again with the person that you love? Is that just the worst? And then a little thing over the laundry becomes this and that and the other thing. And the next thing, the ring comes off and slammed down on the counter. And says, I don't even know. My mom told me I shouldn't. And there's this huge fight. And it's like, the laundry wasn't done. Here's why. I got an issue. Talk to my wife after. She'll tell you. I mean, I got issues. They're my issues. But the moment I put my expectations on the other person, I'm going to have what I want and you're responsible for it. It becomes so destructive. And remember, it's not about desires, because the desires are really good. But an expectation is dangerous. So what are you going to do? Let me give you an idea. Jot some notes down. Here's a great question to ask yourself. Be willing to ask yourself this question. What do I think my spouse owes me? Clarice told me last week, you know, I'm working all the time. We got the church going on, so I got a job, and we're getting this church going, and off we go, and I got all my time, parent talks, working with the team, you know, so my time is just like everywhere, and you know, and she feels like, I always give you time to get your work done, I leave you alone, I let you do that, and now you owe me some time. It's like you owe me to spend some time with me and take me out to see the leaves change, or was you like, you owe me that time. And I can feel that, and that's a huge pressure for me. And so you know what I do is I thought, like, well, wait a minute, you don't know what it's like to be me, man. I'm working really super hard, and these people are going to come, and I got to have a talk ready. And I, you know, I'm trying to work and get my stuff done, and you don't understand what it's like. And then the fight begins. Well, you don't know, and then it's just on. It's the 4th of a week, not July. It's like the whole week of July. What do you feel like your spouse owes you? And you might need to say an atheist prayer. It's like my buddy at work. He just says, I'm not saying I believe in God, but I know I need help. You might need a little help to just say an atheist prayer to figure it out. Like, where is it that I think God owes me? And more importantly, what do I think my spouse owes me? What do I think this world? Because you know what? when it is so disappointing when we don't get what we expect. We get disappointed with our spouse, and we get disappointed with our marriage and our life. Isn't it true? Everything starts to unravel. Everything. And so look at the bottom line today. Let me read a scripture to you. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. And then Jesus cares about your desires. See, here's the thing now. If you're thinking, you've come today and you went, oh, I'm going to try church. I don't know if I believe in God. I'm going to be there. And so it's great to have you here. It's church for everyone. Everybody can come. And you might think, why do you have to drag God into it? Can't you just give me a few tips on marriage and leave it at that? You can't. Because here's my experience. That we all turn our desires into expectations. We all do it. So normal and natural. We know what we want. And we all turn it into expectations. And you know who we really think should be responsible? The other person. And we all do it. And it, I can't send you home today with some big pep speech and say, now go home and try really hard. Be a good person. Don't do that to him and be better than that. And it won't work. You're going to need some help. If there's any relationship that sort of turns us toward God, maybe that's why God created in marriage. So we'd get married and we'd go, oh, you, I need you. I mean, if there's any relationship that'll sort of get you looking towards heaven and go, whoo, I need some help. And you know who wants to give you the desires of your heart? It says it clear, it's the Lord Himself. And don't think Jesus is so religious. He doesn't care about the 3/4-ton truck that you're coveting. Because He cares. If it matters to you, it matters to Him. Whatever your desires are, He cares about. And so I am sort of one, you know, it's like, yeah. Jesus is the one, listen now, that will turn your expectations back into desires.